you know, if you're a fundraiser, you know, you're a dream broker in a way, because you're just allowing a donor to achieve the impact that they want to achieve in the world through whatever gift they have to give. So you're just connecting the dots like a broker. You're not asking for a handout. You're not a beggar on the corner. It's not a negative thing.
Hello, and welcome to the Shared Space podcast with me, your host, David Rowles. In this podcast series, I will be looking at the world of work, business, and working solutions with a focus on small businesses and entrepreneurs and how many of them choose the co-working way, or what I prefer to refer to as a shared space. And joining me today is Mr. Derry Derringer, the CEO of Derringer Consulting. Welcome to the show, Mr. Derringer.
Thank you so much.
So, you go under the guise of Derringer Consulting. Obviously Derringer after your good self, as the founder and CEO, I assume. But what type or range of consulting services do you actually provide?
Well, I work with nonprofits, mostly the executive director, development team, and board, to help them grow and thrive through better fundraising and better strategic planning.
Okay. And obviously, I mean, you're providing these services, but is there a one-size-fits-all solution for each client that you have?
Well, there's never a one-size-fits-all in my business. I work with nonprofits that range from a $500,000 annual budget up to a $50 million annual budget.
Wow.
And a very wide range. I would say a third are association foundations. A third are your local community, like human services, nonprofit organizations, and then one third is other. And in that other includes some education, some international NGOs, and a mix. I would say that most of my clients come to me because they're looking for some structure to help them be more efficient with either raising money or planning their future. That's the strategic planning part. So I'm either providing a structure for them. I also do a lot of facilitation and coaching. So one way or another, I'm helping them get from point A to point B through either a new structure that I help them implement or coaching them on new techniques and ideas to get over hurdles. Or I'm facilitating discussions with their teams and board to help them, you know, move beyond whatever problem or barriers in the way.
So, I mean, here in the DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia metro area, which is a magnet for nonprofits, I mean, there must be so much competition among these nonprofits for funds, which obviously makes it even more difficult, you know, with a flood of fundraisers. Is Derringer Consulting able to steer its client ship through this storm?
So typically I work in a very practical and straightforward way. So a nonprofit might come to me to raise more money in grants from foundations. They may come to me to create a fundraising plan, or they may come to me to increase their gifts through major gifts fundraising. I always start with what I have. So every nonprofit has assets. They have a uniqueness. They have value that they provide to their clients and to their donors. I just work with them to find the unique proposition that's going to set them apart. And then I give them the tools to help get that word out to the public in an efficient way. So I help them do what they're already doing, but just, you know, better, faster, bigger.
I see.
That way.
That makes sense. Are you willing to take on any kind of nonprofit, or does there need to be like a mutual philosophical understanding between both parties?
I would love to talk to any nonprofit that's out there. It doesn't matter if it's a political organization, a religious organization, what the cause is, what the size is. And I always want to start with a conversation. But there are times where I'm not the right fit, whether it's my skill set or whether it's the need that they have. I always refer them to the right person. I spend a lot of time building up partnerships and expertise and networks of people that are out there serving other nonprofits to make sure that I can make good referrals to folks when there's not a match.
Uh-huh. And so how long have you actually been in this type of business then?
I've been doing this for about 10 years.
Okay.
Had about 60 to 70 clients over the last 10 years.
And is your model and methodology, is it universal or does it only fit the U.S. nonprofit sector? Or are you able to provide services to overseas nonprofits mm-hmm. as well?
I would say my services and my advice and the models and methods are universal. So they're universal truths, if you will, around how donors want to be talked to, how teams work together and don't work together, and just the basics. So whether you're a European nonprofit or an Asian foundation or donor, these things work across all cultures and countries.
And I see on your website that you state 91% of nonprofits report a high staff turnover because of the difficulty of fundraising. Is that the key part of your service in trying to deal with that difficulty of fundraising?
Exactly. At the end of the day, that is always the nut that I'm trying to crack with board members, executive directors, volunteers, staff. What I like to say in this business, David, is that, you know, if you're a fundraiser, you know, you're a dream broker in a way, because you're just allowing a donor to achieve the impact that they want to achieve in the world through whatever gift they have to give. So you're just connecting the dots like a broker. You're not asking for a handout. You're not a beggar on the corner. It's not a negative thing. Once you understand how it works and are comfortable, you know, it's a super positive, wonderful profession. And I wish more folks that are dealing with fundraising, whether you're an officer or a board member, would spend the time to sit down with people that have a knowledge of this trade and understand how the money conversations go so they can get to that place of being a dream broker.
I have to say, I do like that description. It's very, very positive. And hopefully our listeners out there will take that to make them understand that. Yeah. And for somebody like myself, who is not familiar with the sector, it seems to be that you are really able to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Would you say that that's the correct analogy?
I don't use that analogy a lot, so I'm getting my head around it. Well, you know, the funny thing about that is when a lot of clients will hire me thinking that I can do that. And it is important for me to set expectations so I'm using their investment wisely and that we're doing the things and the actions and the follow-up that actually work. If you hire a consultant, sometimes they're expected to do miracles. And I explain up front that that's not how it works, but I can do this. And, you know, I love my clients and I've really never had a bad client or project because I do that upfront work.
Oh, that's great. I'm pleased to hear that. There are many processes and complexities that need administering in order to achieve that final objective for your clients. Could you enlighten our listeners to those logical steps and processes, if that's at all possible, please?
Obviously, 90% of solving a problem is knowing what it is. And so the situation and problem that's at hand, I spend a lot of time on to uncover what it is that we're trying to solve. And that often gets overlooked, and people will rush to action and to sit to decision rather than uncovering the real problem. That is one. The second is, you know, really helping people to think about, well, what would happen if this is not uncovered or resolved? What is the cost, or what will happen in 5 years if you continue on the way you're going? Because they might be fine with going on the way they're going, or be not need to really, really change. In some cases, it's crucial to change. If people identify the problem and it's crucial to solve the problem, I've got them 75% of actually solving the problem. Then the third step is really looking more in the nitty-gritty of the human resources that they have in their volunteers and staff, the programs that they're delivering, the reputation they have in the market. And based on those, you know, giving them the plans, the methods, and the follow-up actions that they need to do themselves, because I'm teaching them to fish rather than fishing for them at the end of the day. to then to follow through. You know, that third step is just putting the pieces in place and doing them and then seeing how you did.
I see. And obviously each client has a different remit and different needs, but I mean, what is the average time that it takes then to analyze a client's requirements and design a strategy and a plan, and then to finally put that plan into action?
Good question. So it depends on what kind of need they have. So if, let's suppose, David, you come to me and you need to make incremental change in your major gifts program or your foundation grants or your corporate giving, to name a few of the revenue streams that I deal with fundraising. The timeline for really identifying, cultivating, and soliciting and bringing in a big gift, say $5,000 or $50,000 or $5 million, you know, that can be 6 months to 24 months.
Wow.
So if you come to me with a problem and you want to identify it and see the assets you have to overcome it and then put the plans in place to overcome it and then implement and really kind of increase your budget from, you know, for example, I'm working with a small therapeutic horse farm in Virginia that works with disabled students. And, you know, they have a small budget. Actually, they're under $500,000. Mm-hmm. But we want to increase their budget by 50% over the next 2 years, this year and next. You know, that's going to be a 6 to 8 month project for me working with them to get them set up to do that.
I see. And once it has been implemented, is that work with the client done and dusted, or does the project and the relationship remain ongoing?
Well, I like to be able to provide them the advice and tools and methods so they can then carry it on and do it themselves. So I'm not needed. So I don't want to be around like a pair of hands. Otherwise, I'd be in-house as a staff. So I want to do my thing and then teach them to fish so they can then fish. But now I do treat my clients and even my prospects that have never been a client like a lifelong family member. So I always keep in touch with all 60 and 70 of my clients I've had and another probably couple hundred prospects that I never had as clients to make sure they're okay and see how they're getting along in their fundraising and strategic planning. Because I'm in it for the long haul to help nonprofits in the DMV. You know, succeed.
That's great. That's a wonderful philosophy and strategy at the same time. So I'm pleased to hear that. And what projects and or clients would you say that have been your greatest challenges and why?
There was a small pre-K nonprofit in Alexandria that, you know, really was making some big decisions about the direction of the organization. And I worked with them to help them get on solid footing. And over the course of 3 years, and I actually worked with them on a couple of small projects after that, they're now growing at a very good clip and thriving and a bigger presence in their field and in Alexandria as a result. And that was kind of a real turnaround project. That was about 6 months. I would say working with a construction company association board, an association foundation board, was really looking for some direction on how to engage its members and increase its endowment, and worked with them over the course of a couple of years on and off again to help them see their relationships with their donors differently and help their ED and staff person, you know, consistently beat their annual revenue budget year over year.
So would you say, therefore, that those have also been your greatest successes then?
I would.
I have to say, I mean, in terms of, you know, hearing about pre-K and also, you know, therapeutic horses, it's, you know, they sound like very rewarding projects, no?
I love working with my clients. Yeah, the nonprofit community is a wonderful place. I mean, everybody cares passionately about what they're doing, whether it's children or education or environment, or just helping families, you know, immigrant families navigate the U.S. All of it's great work.
I see listed under your services, you also have corporate. Now, can you define or elaborate on the true interpretation of that?
That's a good question. So corporate giving and partnerships can be one of the most, you know, least understood and probably one of the best potential areas to look for fundraising. You know, the corporate giving, you can break that down into maybe 10 different buckets of opportunity when it comes to foundations. Some is cash giving, some is volunteer support, some is in-kind giving, and some is things like marketing partnerships. So staff workforce development. So there are so many ways that a company can give money or in kind or services that it's surprising to me there aren't more nonprofits that are engaging with their corporate donors and volunteers to find out those opportunities. It can be a little complicated to navigate the staffing and decision structure of a company, large or small. So I think that deters some nonprofits from investing the time to do it.
Yes. I mean, that was going to lead me on to my next question, really. Can nonprofits and corporate businesses be bedfellows, so to speak?
Of course they can. Everybody's human.
Okay.
I don't want to be terse, but a nonprofit, it's important for them to be clear about what their gift acceptance policy is.
Uh-huh, I see.
And what their values are as an organization. And to talk to those companies and employees that are in the same sandbox as them. And, be the clearer you are about, and the more you're driving what you will and won't have in an arrangement, it just makes that outreach much easier. I think where nonprofits get into trouble is, a company might approach them with an opportunity and they just say, great, let's go down the path. But they really haven't spent the time as a nonprofit to be clear about who they are in terms of their connection with companies. And that's where trouble happens.
Oh, I see. So, I mean, that working together, I mean, it's not ethically incompatible in any way for those nonprofits to be seen to be dealing with corporate business.
It depends on what the nonprofit's values and gift acceptance policy are.
I see.
So they're going to want to be working with the companies that match up with, they have a set of donors and clients and values and a mission that they support. So, if they're working with children, they're not going to want to be working with tobacco companies, for example.
Yeah.
So you want to be clear about what your objectives are and match it up. So, yeah, good question.
Okay. And in the light of the current COVID-19 pandemic, I mean, how much more do you think your services will be in demand as nonprofits face an even more difficult future with fundraising, as everyone will be tightening their belts as resources become even scarcer in this recessionary period?
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about that. And, there was a period where donations actually went up because of the pandemic. And I think in the summer, we might see some dip, a little bit of fatigue and with summer happening, but then things should recover back. So, my fellow consultants and colleagues are really encouraging our clients and others to stay the course around the programs that they're doing and the mission they're delivering and then the conversations they're having with their donors and volunteers. But to be clear about what it is your organization is doing in response to COVID-19, how are you either adapting or pivoting or making adjustments? Because people want to know it's happening, and that goes for if there's an economic downturn, in how that might be affecting the organization. If there's a reducing of budget, how would that affect delivering programs? But at the same time, there are some nonprofits that are growing at a faster rate because of increased donations. Depending on the mission area you're in, you can make a case for increased giving or increased need, health-related nonprofits, community-based organizations that are supporting families and children and students during this time. For example, can justify, wanting to grow to be able to handle the needs that are out there that, not able to be covered by government support.
Indeed. Yes. And so, you are based, are you, in the D.C. area?
I'm based in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay, and is that from the novel co-working premises in Alexandria?
Absolutely. It's great here at Novel Co-working.
Okay, I'm pleased to hear that. So how long have you been using Novel Co-working then for your business space?
About 18 months.
Okay, and what made you choose Novel Co-working?
I came in for a tour and I met the staff here. I like the friendly and comfortable atmosphere, a very good value for what you get for the price, close to my house, and just had a good feel to it.
Oh, I'm pleased to hear that. That's great. Is it like finding a strategy and plan for your clients? I mean, that Novel Co-working similarly provides, you know, your business needs and premises, just like you provide those strategies and plans for your clients at the same time.
Yes, I think co-working and, you know, the Novel Co-working model is definitely going to be in higher demand. And I think small businesses, even larger businesses, are really excited about the model. Someone had mentioned to me the other day that they were, you know, really excited about the fact that, you know, if they're based here in the DC area, but every now and again, they're visiting other cities, you know, Chicago or LA or even like smaller cities, they used to just get a hotel. But now with the Novel space, you know, they're able to grow at a faster rate and hire staff in those cities. And it's because the co-working model, you know, is affordable and, you know, allows you to have a bigger footprint across the country faster. Having this facility and what I do here and the client meetings I have here and the virtual consulting and facilitation I do in this office is a big part of my plans for growth. And I couldn't do this from a coffee shop, and I can't afford another type of office. So this allows me to do a lot more as a small business than I would be able to do otherwise.
I see. And I mean, during this time, obviously, we've been suffering from COVID-19. I mean, has that impacted you in any way in terms of how you operate your service and business from Novel Co-working?
When we had the quarantine requirement from the state, you know, I worked from home a little bit. No, I mean, I've been able to, you know, I'm working here now, and I've been able to, it's been, you know, the staff has been very flexible and proactive and making sure that things are distancing and policies and clean to be able to feel safe working here.
Oh, that's great to hear. Do you see that, you know, despite, you know, the changes that we're facing, obviously, in the workplace due to COVID-19, certainly until we have a vaccine, that places like Novel Co-working can still facilitate and grow as a business, providing these services to startups and entrepreneurs looking for business premises?
Yeah, I think that Novel can definitely be an option, and it can be done safely within whatever the state's policies are in terms of distancing and safety. I think it's maybe even, you know, a better place to be than other offices or buildings that where you might have less control over the distancing policy. So absolutely.
How can those interested listeners find out more about Derringer Consulting and get in contact with you?
I would go to my website, www.derringerconsulting.com.
Okay.
That's one. I'm also on LinkedIn. Just find Derry Derringer. D-E-R-R-Y is the first name. There's not many Derrys out there, so it's easy to find.
Great to hear, Derry. So, well, many thanks for your time today and providing myself and our listeners, obviously, the world of nonprofits, how they can benefit from, you know, your consulting services, and hopefully for some of our listeners who are thinking about starting up or, you know, finding a business space, that Novel Co-working can also provide them with a service. So many thanks for your time today, Derry.
David, thank you. And Novel's been great. Come on and join us. And I really enjoyed this podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to hear that, Derry. Okay. Take good care of yourself and your friends and family. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Great. All the best to you, David.
Likewise. The Shared Space podcast is a Zyma Media production, produced by Julio Gonzalez. Zyma Media provides solutions to all your composition, audio, and video production needs. You can find Zyma, remember, that's remix backwards, on Twitter at Zyma Media or online at zyma.co. Original music for the Shared Space podcast was composed and arranged by Julio Gonzalez. Want to find out more about the Shared Space podcast? You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Shared Space Pod, and also online at sharedspacepodcast.com. To subscribe and listen to the Shared Space podcast, you can find us at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Audioboom.